Bonjour à vous tous et bienvenue au Parlement européen. Je suis heureuse.
So good afternoon. I'd like to welcome you in the European Parliament. I'm here with my colleague, Ms. Aubergin. You're all in a very important place for those matters, the jungle tour developed, and it was quite successful in the public debate for welcoming the migrant workers on the European territory. But anyhow, I would like to find out more what you did, and you had an opportunity of meeting a lot of people, whether it's elected people, association, citizens, and migrant workers themselves. And so we're all wanting to listen to you, also the asylum policies within the European Union. These are debates which are, from a political point of view, discussed a lot within the European Parliament, and because all these matters are now within the framework of co-decision, and these are discussed over with the Council. The Council representing the member states, different approaches, of course, in the different countries with some shades of differences, but in general, the approaches are very restrictive, unfortunately, and very little opened up to improvement, whether it's for the welcoming conditions of the migrant workers or with regard to the procedures with which the migrant workers have or can formulate the asylum request, or also the different motivations for delivering this status. So we have to fight on each and every point, and my colleague, who knows this pretty well, most of the directives today are in standby because it's very difficult to make this evolve. And it's very difficult to find a common position, so it's quite difficult to find this common position. And later on, as we will be meeting for an hour, and then afterwards we'll go to the IB Commission and vote on the compromise that has been negotiated with the Council on the Frontex agency, which is controlling the external borders of the European Union, and it's pretty vague regarding the responsibilities vis-à-vis human rights, and it was also a very difficult piece of work in order to come to these bodies, but we didn't succeed that these new bodies of Frontex, an advisory body, so that it becomes totally independent and that guarantees the reliability of those mechanisms that can document all the stakeholders, also with regard to responsibility. So all this to tell you that it's quite judicious to meet here within the heart of Europe, within our European Parliament, and also the energy you spent on developing the issue and on distributing the knowledge on the subject and to make the European Union progress on this. Now, I would like to invite you, so first Marie-Christine, perhaps she can tell us a few words now or later on, as she wishes, Marie-Christine, and then I would like to invite you to present your initiative, and then afterwards, not the conclusions, of course, because, of course, I believe you'll need future meetings after the jungle tour, but perhaps listening to you and if you could tell us the contents of your discussions you had with the different stakeholders, and Marie-Christine and myself will try and make a good use of this in order to enrich our arguments and the forthcoming debate within the European Parliament, and this in order to improve, of course, the situation of the migrant workers. So I don't know how you've organized all this, but taking the floor, well, perhaps Marie-Christine first. Yes, perhaps a few words. I'd like to present myself. We're in the room of the Greens. I'm not a member of the Green. So Hélène and me, we used working together regularly on these topics and to have, well, kind of common position on the different issues. It is true the way in which things are evolving today within European institutions is quite worrying, quite concerning after all, because it's very difficult to make all subjects progress, all these subjects related to the migrant workers, because the member states, well, they fall back on their own competences. The Commission and the Union, they make a lot of progress on many other subjects, but as far as migration is concerned, this is a status quo, and it's a very difficult negotiation. Well, also on Schengen, we had a very difficult negotiation last week, and I consider that there are the borders within Europe, we're organizing this debate, and it avoids having a debate on what is going on outside of the European Union. And what is being done is that all the borders are being closed, and here I agree with Hélène. But there's also the Arab evolution, so there will be a lot of changes coming on. But I can agree on a lot of things that have been said by Hélène. Thank you. So there's a translation into English and into French. There's one person wearing the earphones. And so we're quite isolated, although we send invitations to all political groups. There are, I'm sure, the representatives of the different bureaus of the MEPs. Perhaps if they could hold up their hands. So it can be quite clarifying and very interesting also for our guests. Claudine, yes? Yes, perhaps. Nathalie Griesbeck of the ADL group, ADLE. So first, I would like to thank the MEPs, and especially Hélène, who made this meeting possible within the European Parliament. So on behalf of all organized participants and welcoming associations of the Jungle Tour, we'd like to thank you, and I'd like to give the floor to Yves, who participated in the different phases, the cycling tour. Also Stefan, the youngest of the group, who will make a summary of this experience and of the general behavior, what was felt, etc. So the Jungle Tour went through different towns, covering about 100 kilometers, and in areas Ancre, Noirfin, and Ostend, where there are a lot of migrant workers. And the participants of the Jungle Tour never saw this hard reality, and they were quite surprised, and were a lot of emotions when they got in touch with this part of the population. We talk to the migrant workers, and something that is always coming up is the attitude by the police forces, and the migrant workers explain that it's a difficult life they have to face, the police violence and what is done, also all the actions taken by the state for the migrant workers. They also use watchdogs. The police also spray tear gas on the migrant workers, and also they cut off the water supply, and this especially in countries where the human rights are being guaranteed. And also the police can also destroy the communication with their families. It's the mobile phones. The police, they just remove the SIM card, throw it in the water, and so forth. So yes, indeed, we did a few hundred kilometers, and we came across. We met migrant workers, people in exile, a lot of people who talk about their persecution, and this is all in the major places, Calais and Ostend. They have no place where they can stay. Police violence are continuous fact. Also, people that are being arrested several times, up to six times a day. So arrest, cufflinks, and then they are sent free again, and the same thing begins over and over. And we met a young person. He was arrested by the same policeman six times the same day, and which is also quite serious, the impossibility to find some sleep. The people, they hide and try and make themselves invisible, but they're being woken up. As soon as they're woken up, as they fall asleep, they're woken up by the police dogs. And there are a lot of witnesses, also people that have been bitten by police dogs, so in the public gardens and all the green areas. And also gas being used, tear gas on the covers, the sheets, the food, all the things that can be used. And we also met people who were ill, and such as the people suffering from diabetes, and the insulin was destroyed by the police. And for someone suffering from diabetes, it's very important to have the insulin on a regular basis and to eat at regular times. And we met two people who had their insulin destroyed, who didn't eat regularly either. So also there was a young boy suffering from schizophrenia, and they had a medical card. Well, medicine was destroyed. The police said, "You're not ill." They destroyed the special card for access to the hospital. So this is the kind of things we've witnessed. And amongst these people, who also met different nationalities, Algerian people, Iranian, Eritrean, Sudan, also people from Vietnam. And amongst these, a lot are asylum seekers, but not all of them. And perhaps the associations could tell more about this. But we met a lot of people who are refugees, who are asylum seekers, especially in Calais, and who normally ought to be protected by the law and also be housed, which is not the case. And they're victims of prosecutions, and this amongst the also a lot of their documents are being destroyed, which I forgot, which is also quite annoying. And this was also witnessed by many people. So also we met, it's also quite interesting, we met people who walk, who go to and fro between Calais and another place. So people who go from Calais to London, London back to Calais. So the asylum was already introduced in Calais, and then once they got a negative answer, they went back to their home country, etc., etc. So people who've been to Calais on several occasions. Also, we met a lot of people who find themselves in a very odd situation. So Eritreans are coming through Italy, going to France, are sent back to Italy, trying to ask for asylum to Sweden, going back to France. So all these things are common practice, but these people do not understand what's going on, nor do I, by the way. So without any reason, these people are being sent back to France. It's like a kind of game of billiards. They go to Calais several times, also to Ostend, etc. We also met people coming through Italy and to other countries. So all this shows that this famous theory doesn't seem to function, because we do everything to improve the situation, but we find people being beaten up, tortured, and this theory doesn't work. And what we saw shows that it doesn't work at all. Then other very interesting things we've met is the solidarity, of course. And during our tour, so it was done by bicycle, we distributed brochure. We only had two negative reactions when distributing these brochures, but a lot of cold reactions, very polite reactions, but most of the reactions, at least sympathetic to our jungle tour. A lot of people feel a lot of empathy vis-à-vis the migrant workers, compassion, and they really welcomed us very warmly. Yes, poor people, and then also people who commit themselves either individually and whilst discussing, not belonging to any association, but they're going, for instance, give some soap, going to provide some milk. So we also met very interesting people in Ostend, the lorry drivers, the Russian lorry drivers who went to England, and they felt a great solidarity with these people, and they're extremely embarrassed by this situation. There's the solidarity on the one hand, and also they're trying to get people across, and for them, for the load in the truck, this is quite dangerous as well. So they're in the middle of all these situations. We also met drivers, of course, also trying to drive people to Calais. And we also met a lot of associations, elected people, different structures also, because there are some associations that have legal existence, some others not, but they are committed and they're doing a quite remarkable job. They do a lot of fabulous work with regard to housing, and it's within the municipal jungle, so to speak. So associations that commit themselves with regard to housing, providing some green space, but not Calais and Ostend. A lot of people intervene, but nothing is being provided for. Then also association who do the follow-up, the medical follow-up, because this is also a huge problem. It's very difficult, because whenever those people are being beaten up, people who got beaten up by the truncheon of policemen, we saw people in the stand, also the different people who were hurt, falling from a lorry, beaten up by the police. We saw a lot of wounded people showing their wounds. And we'll come back to it. We met associations responsible for the follow-up, the medical follow-up. We also met elected people who also go pretty far. They commit themselves. Also people who commit themselves but do not dare to talk about it. They do a lot of things, but, well, they want to remain anonymous. Because if they tell other people, perhaps they won't be able to continue. Then another important thing, we traveled with a mobile radio station. It's a Parisian radio, and this studio we were able to install it in quite surprising places, on the place in Ancre, in front of the town hall. There was a program organized by us. We can also listen to it on the blog. We did the same thing in different places. Each time we were really welcomed very warmly. There were very interesting discussions that took place on solidarity and many other subjects. So we also noted down a lot of testimonies. A lot were registered, but of course some were recorded, some others not, because you cannot be on your bike, talk to people right at the same time. So it was quite difficult, of course. But then some others' testimonies, which you didn't receive yet, but they will be made available, and also on the blog of the Jungle Tour, and we'll give the address to you later on. And also the audio blog with all the different... We created an audio blog. It's called The Echo of the Jungle. And all testimonies will be made available, as I already mentioned. So they will be made available on this audio blog. So the link is here, front page. And these testimonies are being communicated by different associative radios in Belgium and in France, and I hope also elsewhere. So would you like to add some more things now? Okay, thank you. So now we give the floor to the different associations who work in the field and who are doing a remarkable job, of course. Elisabeth Fiché, perhaps if you could express the different concerns of your association. Yes, Elisabeth Fiché, I'm part of the association, which is called CROMI. It's especially for migrant workers. We first try to collect some clothing, then the center was closed, then we discovered progressively the problems of all the people. Some people didn't want to return to Calais, etc. So the only thing I wanted to say now are a few words about this precarization of housing, the emergency shelters, and this is one of the main focuses, because some people, they really wonder where they're going to sleep at night, of course. And it is also very close to cities where there are asylum seekers. There's no room for them in the different official centers, and they fall under the category 115 for the daily request for shelter. Then in Lille, that's where I live, there are 800 people on the street without any housing at all. They are systematically being refused, and last year at the same time we found housing one out of three nights, but it's a very awkward situation. Then the forecast of the departmental plans for housing insertion and integration are quite concerning. There were a lot of people protesting in Lille and other towns. There are 2,100 people in the region that can no longer be accompanied or will no longer find housing space as from winter onwards. And also a lot of people working for the associations run the risk of being made redundant. So it's quite a dramatic situation. And these welcoming centres are threatened with closure as from October onwards, for instance, a centre in Lille, because the subsidies have been reduced quite substantially. And there was also a protest movement last Saturday in Paris. And in this particular
context, the asylum seekers or those who call upon the CDNA are more, are even more vulnerable than other people because there's an official quota in these housing structures. Because these people, so the migrant workers, they're worth less with regard to the number of nights spent in these centres. So the structures have no interest, so especially if they want to be subsidised, so it's not in their interest to welcome people that do not bring in any money at all. And there's also an association of Emmaus in Lille, and they became a victim due to the fact that they paid a strong price. And then I'll end by that. Our militants who are committed, we know that we'll find ourselves in a very tight situation in the coming months. Thank you, Elizabeth. Claire? So we're in Bayeul, a place where there are no migrant workers, there are no motorways bringing in people either, but we have about 110 members, 50 volunteers. We have an action center in Calais where we distribute meals and clothing. We also inform the population on the migration. We organize a lot of events. And Flanders Terre Solidarity area. So a lot of migrant workers were filmed, shown afterwards to the population. So there's a film that has been made. It also was presented during a festival, about an hour and 10 minutes. And during 6 months, during winter, we also open a camp for ill migrant workers to assist them medically and also psychologically. We'd also like to draw the attention of those people coming out of hospitals. They come out of hospital after 5 days after being operated on, but then they're in the street, and it's not appropriate a situation because it's not really it's not a very good thing because they need to travel several kilometers in order to get to be taken care of, clothing, meals, etc., but they ought to be resting. And people find themselves quite often in the street without any housing that is really taking care of their state of health. A lot of people who are physically and psychologically exhausted, that's another thing we can notice and which is being translated by a lot of depressions. When they come to our centres, we bring them all the things they need to live, but then they think of all the things their experiences. So it's a period during a week they are totally turned into themselves, and we need a lot of energy by the volunteers who try and help them, talk to them, so that they once again take their lives in their own hands. But this really shows the psychological state in which those people find themselves. Some people who arrive in the centres who do not want to continue to live. There's also the issue of people in the street, the illnesses, contagious, tuberculosis. There was also a tuberculosis sent to us by the hospital. In the hospital, they told us there's no danger because we mentioned that we had volunteers. But, of course, there are volunteers, but there's a minimum of protection, of course, also, which is needed. But the hospital said there's no danger at all. It was not contagious. And 36 hours afterwards, he had to be brought to Calais because he was contagious after all. So there's a kind of elementary protection. And so we had to get in touch with all the volunteers who worked with that person, also setting up the prevention system. So all this is in a context. Also, we have to make savings. And finally, this leads to a lot of awkward situations, because if you tell a voluntary worker that he might suffer from tuberculosis later on, all these are things we don't need. Also, the situation of families with children. There are some children of 4 or 5 years old, and also an 8 days old baby. The association paid 3 days of a hotel, and after 8 days, the young 8 days old child had to sleep in the street, of course, so they decided to seek for asylum in France. And of course, they had their prince in Italy, and I negotiated with one of the employees, but are you going to send someone to Italy, an 8 days old baby? And so finally he accepted the asylum forms in France. But it all depends on the employee you come across. If not, they would have been expelled to Italy. But it's not medical, but it's sanitary. And these are situations which we have to draw the attention to, because an 8 days old baby is quite fragile, of course. It's a minimum of humanity, of course, which is needed. And if we can do this just to the slightest, it's already something positive. But a baby coming out of maternity in the street, I wanted to draw your attention to all these situations. Claire.
Si tu veux bien nous parler de...
So, a few things more about Calais. So when Jungle Tour arrived in Calais, we were in a particularly stressful situation. We didn't know where we would be able to meet those migrant workers. So 10 days before the main squad was evacuated, then we asked the police whether there was a justification of this evacuation. We didn't obtain it. So it's something quite systematic. This squad was welcoming between 90 and 120 asylum seekers. And so people, normally they should have been taken care of by the state, and everyone was in the street with a lot of police pressure. People tried to install or to go to another building. They were, of course, evacuated once again by the police forces. And then those people disappear. We do no longer know where they are. They might hide in Calais or elsewhere. And sometimes we lose all links they have with our association.
Around the same time, the new Defender of Rights received a report on police violence following 2 years of work by an association called Border Violence, with the support of other organisations. This represented considerable support because it meant a commitment to investigate. It also meant that the Defender of Rights was going to actually deliver, because this was clearly not going to be easy to handle. And so the conjunction of the two shows that Calais and the prefecture do not necessarily have a lot of respect for the independence of the Defender of Rights. We hope that this report will be updated, and we're also going to call upon other authorities as necessary to maintain pressure in this area. The backlash is also that rights defenders are being taken to court on grounds of charges of violence. It's not the first time. 3 of them are going to be tried over the next few days, were tried in June based simply on police statements. Nobody could demonstrate that anyone had been wounded or hurt or whatever. They were just accused of violence and convicted on the faith of those reports. On the atmosphere in Calais, we also feel the backlash of the government discourse, which is more or less openly racist. Now, the residents of the jungles know that they aren't supposed to be visible, and the people who help the inhabitants of the jungles know that they shouldn't show themselves too much, that they should do so discreetly. And it's worrisome, not just in Calais, in other areas, in the French Flanders. But, we're concerned. Thank you, Philippe. We don't have much time left. I'm going to ask you to be as brief as possible. Among the other associations represented in the room, does any wish to add anything to what's been said already? I don't want anybody to be frustrated, because there's quite a lot to say. I don't want to be the one deciding who should take the floor and who should not. Go ahead. I wanted to provide or to shed light on travelers and more generally people without a dobe. We lack subsidies for the purpose of emergency reception and accommodation. We lack funding for asylum seeker reception centres. We're a small village in Nord-Pas-de-Calais. Our situation is different compared to Calais or Dunkirk, because there's tolerance among local authorities, and we have the support. We enjoy the support of local government, so we have been able to stabilise shelters and chronicle skin diseases among these populations are disappearing. Most wounds and trauma are disappearing. Intra-community and police violence are disappearing. But we haven't been able, as an association, to settle these people. We can't bring them out of the jungle because of European directives and regulations that make it illegal to do so, and that are interwoven with national or local rules and regulations. And whenever you discuss the situation with local authorities, they will say that it's because of Brussels, because of Europe. The lack of access of migrant people and asylum seekers is due to the Dublin II regulation. And whenever Europe is discussed, the dramatic situations and the new exile of asylum seekers in Italy, France and Greece are due to national situations. So we find ourselves between the devil and the hard place, and 4 years into our observation of life in a single camp, we can say that some people sometimes come back to the camp 4 or 5 different times. And so they cannot stabilise, they cannot find ways to fend for themselves or take care of themselves. All they want to do is go to England. England is an attraction. It seems to be the place where all asylum seekers and refugees want to go, because they're not being catered for and provided for anywhere else. Many asylum seekers who want to go to the UK, or undocumented migrants want to go to the UK, enter the EU through Italy or Spain, and we know that they won't be going back to their country. We know that it won't be going to the UK because they won't be accepted there. And so they're only going to become ping pong balls being driven from everywhere and taken everywhere and going to jail everywhere in and across Europe. Some people have been in prison 10 or 11 times. There's growing police pressure, and some people have been in prison on 10 different occasions over the last 6 months. People want to integrate, want to become included in society, but they have no future, and we are powerless to help them. We can't provide for them, we can't support them, because we're supposed to do everything for them. Accommodate them, provide social and social support and healthcare, etc. The Dublin II regulation will be celebrating 10 years of existence within the next couple of years, and we'd like for the states to take stock of the situation and to clearly say how many people have been readmitted, how many people have been simply thrown on the roads of the south, of the east, Scandinavia and England, on their way to Scandinavia and England. I work with an NGO in Brussels. So we'd like to take the floor for a couple of minutes to explain the situation in Brussels, because it exists in other countries. My NGO wants to allow poor people to speak for themselves. We are in an area near an asylum seeker and a documented migrant reception centre. We have quite a lot of undocumented migrants roving the streets trying to find trying to find work on the informal labour market at very low hourly pay rates and wages. So what we want to do is develop projects that allows them to take the floor, speak for themselves, and also come to grasps with their situation. We're trying also to promote a long-term political awareness of the situation. We want asylum seekers and undocumented migrants to also look at their own future and who they should try and see and what policy they would need in order to be supported. We would have liked to bring them here, but apparently it isn't possible. You need proper ID to enter the European Parliament, and they don't have that. We also represent a group of undocumented migrants who have organized themselves as undocumented migrants. They are conducting their struggle to be regularized. There are quite a number of groups of undocumented migrants who are occupying places illegally, militant support groups and advocacy groups are defending their case. Let me briefly cover two examples before I surrender the floor. The first one relates to violence as part of the expatriation process, repatriation process, deportation process. People are threatened with violence all the time, and it's very difficult for them to lead a normal life in the face of this threat. We have a website called Getting the Voice Out. We have a phone call. We have a phone number, for people who are in close reception centres. We're trying to get testimonies outside from them. The first one's from a Lebanese citizen who said, before I give you my name, I should tell the story of a guy who spoke to the press 3 days ago, giving his name and his first name. He was then detained and placed in isolation. If I say who I am, it's going to be hell for me here. So I cannot give you my name because there'll be consequences. This is a prison. It's horrible here. I can't sleep at night. They come every night to watch over us, see whether we're sleeping, check whether we're sleeping. So you're sleeping at 4:30 in the morning, they knock at the door and ask whether you're okay and you need anything. They do this to drive us crazy. They're playing with us. I'm just going to stop here because it goes on and on. Then there's the story of the mattress, which we've heard on several occasions, documented independent testimonies confirmed by different people. They tried to deport me 7 times, and twice they put me on the floor and placed a mattress over my body and then hit the mattress. The mattress won't reduce the pain you feel, but it will avoid visible traces on your skin. This degree of violence has left substantial traces in my body. Thank you, Micah. From Pigment, that's the name of your association in Brussels, a Dutch-speaking association in Brussels. I suggest to give the floor to Alain Delame from Amnesty International. who can maybe try and piece it all back together and look at how local issues in the field also stem from EU policy. The first thing that strikes me when I hear about police violence in Calais and also in Brussels, as reported to us, my first impression is that Calais is an open-air enclosed reception centre, because apparently the same levels of violence, such as waking people up at 4:30 in the morning or three or four times during the night, is a technique that's used everywhere. What I'd like to do is recall that there are EU directives. We don't necessarily agree with them. We believe them to be too restrictive. We think they don't go far enough in the direction of protecting the and preserving the dignity of exiles. But they exist, those EU directives. And when I hear what's been said about the reception and accommodation of asylum seekers and undocumented migrants, clearly there are two or three articles in the reception directive that apply here. Article 13, general conditions applying to reception and healthcare. Member states need to ensure that asylum seekers have access to material conditions of reception. Member states take measures to ensure an adequate level of health, subsistence and living for asylum seekers when housing is provided, which is not the case in most of the situations we've been discussing. When housing is provided, when accommodation is provided, it has to be in the form of accommodation in reception centres, houses, private hotels or other adapted appropriate places. The example of what happened when Asquas in Calais was last evacuated on the 27th of June is clearly an example of the failure to enforce this directive on reception of asylum seekers and undocumented migrants. According to France Terre d'Asile, half the people who have been deported and who have been the victims of violence and about whom Helen wrote to the prefect of Nord-Pas-de-Calais yesterday, also recalling the Thomas Sommerbeck report, Mr. Sommerbeck being the Ombudsman of the Council of Europe for Human Rights. Roughly half of those 200 people were asylum seekers. So these are situations that NGOs are facing all the time, including in the case of people who have been granted asylum and who are still roofless. This is in violation of the requirement for dignity enshrined in international law and the principle of legal and equal access to rights. It is difficult to apply for asylum. It is time-consuming, complicated, complex. You have to be in touch with lawyers. You have to be able to document your whole history of abuse in your home country. Everything needs to be written down, and you can't do that while sleeping under the bridge or when you are woken up three or four times a night. You can't write the story of your life in such conditions, and therefore you cannot bring this procedure to a successful completion. And asylum seekers who have been faced with evacuation such as at Lille or at the Rue des Carpes in Paris, people simply disappear. They won't go to the trouble of applying again. When you are taken in custody, you also face the risk of never being reunited with whatever few documents you may have had on your person. EU legislation reduces access to asylum. The EU may justifiably need to decide what country should consider the asylum application, but it's not fair because transfers are costly and it happens altogether too often that the cost is prohibitive. We should be looking at these procedures from the perspective of, from the angle of the cost. How much does it cost to house police officers and intervention forces at Calais? Wouldn't it be cheaper to house asylum seekers properly? EU legislation is supposed to force countries such as Greece to accept and accommodate asylum seekers and their applications, which they don't have the means of addressing properly. And the European Court of Human Rights has blamed Greece on several occasions for that. And EU legislation is too mechanical when it comes to dealing with asylum applications. Many people who should theoretically be successful asylum seekers don't actually apply for asylum because they fear they're going to be sent back to countries such as Greece or Italy where they know they're not going to be adequately protected. I also planned to say a few words about the deportation or the return directive and what we know of detention conditions in France and the implementing degrees of the so-called Loi Besson, which were published yesterday, which are fairly vicious, but that was to be expected. On closed reception centres in Brussels, I believe we've had a fair account of the situation a moment ago, so I think I'm going to leave it at that. But before I do, I'd like to first quote someone and then ask a question. In an excellent article published in Le Monde, in Libération, sorry, yesterday, and the journalist reported, and the prefect of Nord-Pas-de-Calais as saying that his objective was not to make life easy on migrants. This is a sentence that is not just cynical and provocative. It is provocative because this was said reportedly to a representative of Médecins du Monde, Doctors of the World, and it's also completely unacceptable from a representative of a public authority who is supposed to be talking on behalf of the French people whom he is supposed to serve. So much for the quote. And then my question, but there's probably no time for a debate, was about a reform of the asylum package and the discussion of the Schengen Agreement that was alluded to earlier on. What is the kind of adjustment that can be made when it comes to evaluating and taking stock of policies? EU policies, national member states policies, and evaluation of individual situations in places, including Calais and places in Greece. And Philippe could probably say a few words about those because he went there a couple of months back. Very practical situations. How are these evaluated? How are these situations assessed? Is this evaluation democratic? Is it done under control of the EU Parliament? Or is it something that the member states do in their own little corner and without much interaction with the others? Thank you very much. I'm sorry, but we have reached the end of this meeting. So, first of all, we need to let go of our interpreters. I'd like to thank you all very much for this initiative, for your testimonies, and also for your analyses and proposals. What you're saying is very important, and it should feed discussions within our committee and within the EU Parliament as a whole. The MEPs have assessment and evaluation capacity at their disposal in those fields. But as I said in my introductory statement, this is a subject that is dealt with using the co-decision principle. Discussions in the European Parliament generally are more open, and they take more substantially into account basic human rights, but there's a right-wing majority in the European Parliament that supports the repressive policies of the more right-wing governments in a variety of EU member states. No need to name and shame them. On the issue of police violence, in the issue table to Dominique Baudis as soon as he was appointed Defender of Human Rights, is excellent. First of all, I'd like to congratulate those who put the file on his table. because it's a great job, well done. This was supported by a large number of associations and NGOs. I think it asks a decisive question in when it comes to the independence and credit of this new office of the Defender of Human Rights. As Alain recalled, I wrote to the prefect of Nord-Pas-de-Calais because we feel that submission of this file to the Defender of Rights led to a backlash and punishing actions in Calais and in the region. It's really hunting season now against migrants in Nord-Pas-de-Calais, and that's wholly unacceptable. Police violence is spontaneous in that nobody ever gave them an order to be this aggressive, but there are basic human rights and principles against degrading behavior, the use of tear gas, for instance, insulting people, waking people up several times a night. This is apparently not, strictly speaking, a French practice, because apparently the same is being done in Belgium's closed reception centres. This is clearly a violation of human rights, and could be the object of lawsuits with the Court of Human Rights and with the European Court of Justice. The housing, the asylum package, including a variety of issues post Dublin, has been the subject of an evaluation, leading to a new package of proposals that are more or less far along. The procedures part of the qualifications directive is going to be voted on tomorrow. A new proposal on minimum reception standards is going to be discussed tomorrow. More humane reception standards are not being implemented, even if they were adopted. This is probably something we could be telling, Marie-Christine and myself could be telling the European Commission, to have the Commission launch infringement procedures, as was the case in with the Roma people some time ago. So this is something we could do together. Bring a few MEPs together, put a question to the European Commission, and ask the Commission to launch infringement procedures against a number of member states for lack of compliance and enforcement of the Directive on Protection of Migrants. The Dublin regulation should be abolished because it is in contravention with another fundamental stake, which is the integration of asylum seekers. I personally believe that asylum seekers should be free to choose the countries where they have friends, the language of which they speak, whose history and other background they can relate with in view of their country of origin. I think that the conditions of asylum seeker integration and inclusion in their country of election should be promoted. They should be allowed, after they've settled in a country, to travel freely within the EU, enjoying this protected status. If other governments come to power in a number of countries in the not-too-distant future, including France, there are things that can be done even before Dublin is reformed or abolished, including suspending the implementation of the Dublin regulation in France. Anyway, it would have the advantage of putting a stop to a circus situation. Because France is playing ping-pong with a number of countries, asking for readmission of people they've just received and having to readmit people they've just expelled. 300 people are being thrown to and fro. This is time and energy consuming, and it serves no purpose at all, and it destroys human people. And it really prevents them from enjoying the level of personal protection that they should rightfully enjoy under international law. So this should really be on top of the agenda of things to be done if there's a change in power in France and other countries. Then on healthcare and medical care, people people's health status. This is about people's and individuals' fundamental rights. Regardless of their status, people have a fundamental right to of access to healthcare. And if there are violations, there can be lawsuits. Of course, it's easier said than done, because if you want to launch such a procedure, you need to go through the whole procedure. And it takes a long time, and it's complicated and costly, and the path to Strasbourg is very long and complicated. And then on your question about reception of of people in precarious situations, clearly reception facilities for homeless and other precarious people are under pressure of budget cuts due to the present economic crisis, and so the reception of people in precarious situations very generally is under pressure, which is further compounded by further budget cuts. I think many issues can be solved quite easily and readily if you allow people a legal residence and allow them to work. Most of them are going to stop being a burden, and that's beneficial to everybody. It's obvious, simple, it's for the common good, and so whoever talks about these issues should be saying that. It's really the simplest way about solving the problem. Allow these people to integrate and work, and they won't be a burden. Of course, some will say, if we do that, we open the floodgates, and everybody who's poor and destitute will come to Europe. But that's not true. And we can be convincing and determinate in saying that you can't just send everybody back. And you can't just allow people to live in the limbos or to sit on the wall like Humpty Dumpty forever. They need to be given a legal status of residence, a long-term legal status of residence. They shouldn't be allowed to stay for 1 year and then be reconsidered. And they should be allowed to work. Anyway, many of them are working, whether legally or not. And whether they work legally or not, they should be allowed to work, and they should have access to social insurance and healthcare, etc., etc. And they should be paid acceptable wages. The French Senate evaluated the cost of deporting one person at 20,000 euros, including the cost of the civil servants who have to handle these cases and situations. So being repressive is too expensive, simply too expensive. And the EU Parliament conducted a survey on the cost of deporting failed asylum seekers and undocumented migrants, because the argument, the prevailing argument was that integrated migrants is too costly, when in fact it's not. And the study ordered by the European Parliament shows that where it costs most, where it's most costly, is where people are detained in closed reception centres. If you allow people to become integrated in society, their asylum-seeking procedure and their integration are natural. So whoever says we should stop them is really playing the smokescreen. They're trying to play a public opinion that's poorly informed and whose base instincts are being encouraged. We want to capitalize on, well, they want to capitalize on people being naturally racist or xenophobe, which they're not. There aren't that many MEPs who share my views or views. You're going to report on the jungle tour. What we can do is have your minutes translated into English so they can be made available to the majority of MEPs. And then maybe within the European Parliament, we can try and identify a few colleagues who could help you because I think this is the second edition of the Jungle Tour, people who could help you further develop your network. What you demonstrated is extremely useful. It is based on field and practical experience, and it shows that the situation is roughly the same in all the places you've visited. So it's very interesting and very useful. So maybe this second Jungle Tour could be leveraged, first of all having it translated into English, and then trying to rally support from other MEPs so that next year you can have an even bigger Jungle Tour going to other places in and areas in Europe. I'm an elected representative. Well, my constituency is in the southeast of France, so our problem is with undocumented migrants from Tunisia at present. I agree wholeheartedly with what Helen just said. One thing I could say slightly more optimistically when it comes to the majority of MEPs and the right-wing majority we have in the European Parliament, I'd say that majorities, well, the border between majorities is fluctuating. And the opinion of a number of MEPs on basic human rights and fundamental rights are issues on which we can tip majorities. There are alternative majorities that can be built. When a baby's on the street, a baby aged 7 days is on the street, it is wholly unacceptable. And nobody will ever say that a seven-day-old baby should be living in the street. And if you face MEPs with such situations, you can rally them. It's so good and well to make speeches about human rights and democracy, but it's even better when you can vote legislation that is in line with your basic and fundamental beliefs and rights. And I also think that people should be told the truth. We tend to be too careful. The discourse about an immigrant invasion, is dominant because it's allowed to stand alone. People should hear the truth. We've been working quite a lot with Helen on the issue in Tunisia. We're being told that 23,000 Tunisians invaded Europe, but at the same time 900,000 to 1 million people fled Libya, half of whom went to Tunisia, a very small country that's just recuperating following a major revolution. 28,000 and a million. There's a bit of a difference there. So it all depends how we present things. And the way you were received at your different stops in reception centres in those jungles means that there's more positive things to be said about the whole process, and we need to rally support for that. Thank you. Thank you, Marie-Christine. So we will send your report to as many colleagues as possible so that you can receive more support when you start putting together the next edition of the Jungle Tour 5 months from now. What I'd like to do is have a picture with you, because I'm proud to have met with you today, and I'd like to put a picture of us on my blog. Thank you. Thank you very much for listening and for being optimistic about the future of our work. I would also like to thank the representatives of the few associations we have been able to listen to this afternoon, and also to excuse the representative of the Belgian French-speaking Human Rights League for Human Rights, whose representative should have been with us today but is unfortunately ill.